Procrastination is a problem that we often have to deal with in our personal lives, especially on a physical level. As you notice in the chart behind me, we never really plan it, but we just get busy and then it's too late. Sometimes the fruit that we bought, I just threw a whole bag of limes away this week. I bought them about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago and they all dried up. I didn't know they would do that. And I didn't use them. And I was a little disappointed in that, but that's just a small purchase. We're going to deal with something a lot worse than that this evening. Leftovers sometimes become stale. Small health problems get big because we're going to go to the doctor and we're going to get it checked, but we just never get around to it. Small projects sometimes become major ones, and sometimes children grow up before we intended for them to, and we never quite help them to get some of the problems that they're dealing with into the open. And so these things happen, and so neglect today, and I don't know, maybe neglect is too strong of a word. Maybe we might use we're just busy elsewhere, we're just too focused on other things. But so often, the little things we can just pass over because it's not that big of a deal. We all waste things, I think, from time to time. It's just the nature of life. I remember one of the Proverbs says the lazy man will kill an animal and then he won't dress it and use anything. And I remember a few times going fishing and never quite getting around to cleaning those fish until it was too late. And that can happen. And so we think about these things. And as I say, they're just a parable. They're just a way for us to look at things that are much more important and sometimes much easier to overlook because they won't go bad in a sense that you can see. These things that we let go, these things that we don't take care of the way that we should. And so the Hebrew writer tells us we must give the more earnest heed to the things we have heard, lest we drift away. So this was a vital concern for God. It's easy to make commitments. It's easy to make promises to God, and all of us have done so because you can't become a Christian without making the good confession. And we make that good confession that Jesus is our Lord, and I believe when we initially make that confession, we mean it. And we intend to do that. But then we've got to give the more earnest heed, lest we drift. For if the word spoken through angels proved steadfast, and every transgression and disobedience received a just reward, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? So God sees neglect as drifting. We have one of the songs in our songbook about soul, you are drifting along on the tide, out in life's ocean, so boundless and wide. Where will you be when you anchor tonight? And so if the Lord came back right now, are we ready? Or have we drifted? Have we let things slide? Is there someone we need to talk to about the gospel? And we keep saying to ourselves, I'm going to get to it. I'm going to get to it. Then we get busy and weeks go by. And these things happen. And they happen to people, but they shouldn't happen. So there's several interesting points that he makes here. Number one, you can't escape the inevitable. If you don't take care of that fruit, it is going to go bad. If you don't take care of those leftovers, they will go bad. If you don't raise your children up in the way they should go, the time is going to pass whether we do it or not. And then when it's over, we can look back and see the neglect and see the drifting and shake our heads and say, I wish I could do it over now, but we can't. And so God wants us to understand. So all small problems that are ignored are going to become bigger. That's why this congregation is very diligent with church discipline. That's why we're constantly watching and dealing with things. Because little problems don't go away. A little leaven doesn't just die out. A little leaven leavens the whole lump. And evil company corrupts good habits. And as Paul tells Timothy, their talk will spread like gangrene. So these things have to be nipped in the bud is how we talk about it. And I use this illustration sometimes in Malawi. because there's trees over there. And I tell them, if you don't take care of this tree, when it's just a little bud, you can see it's going to grow out and it's going to go right into your door, or it's going to go right into your window. Break it off when it's still small. Don't wait till it's this big, because then it's too late. It's going to mar the tree and damage the tree. So little things have to be dealt with. So oftentimes we know it's dangerous, we know it's foolish, but we're busy with other things. So we let it slide. Then slowly over time, we get a division in the church. Or somebody falls away. Or we fall away. Or we get caught up in a sin that we never intended to get caught up in, but it just got a little bigger and a little bigger and a little bigger. And so these are things that we need to give serious consideration to. Because as Jesus points out in the parable of the sower, which is given in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And so I put them all here. And I'm not going to deal so much with the hard heart or the thorny, rocky heart. I want to look at the thorny heart. Because thorns, like a lot of things, when you are growing your crop and you've got some weeds out there and you just let them go, well, what's going to happen? Well, they're going to choke the word. And so Jesus says, we're not talking about weeds here. We're talking about the cares of this world, the deceitfulness of riches, and the desire for other things. And as he points out, some people become choked with cares and riches and pleasures of life, and they bring no fruit to maturity. Now, I know that for most of us, that's talking about somebody else, right? That's not talking about me. That's for Alan. That's for somebody else. That's not for me. And we think like that. But the problem is, and especially in our culture, with the multitude of things that money can buy today and the hobbies we can get involved in and the entertainment values that we can begin to, and suddenly we wake up one day and our faith isn't as strong as it was. Or our commitment to God doesn't have the same strength and the same unbendable, unbreakable thing that maybe it had throughout maybe our 20s or 30s. And suddenly we wake up one day and we say, what happened? Well, we better trace it back and find out what happened, and we better nip it before it gets any bigger. Because these things are not going to get smaller, and they're not going to go away. We may not intend it. We may not plan it. But day by day, eating like gangrene, leavening and corrupting, these things, we can drift away. That's what neglect will do. And so our prayer life is a habit, but it can easily get broken. We get busy one day and don't have time to pray, and I don't have time to pray. And pretty soon we look at our lives and we say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. I'm not praying like I used to. And so, again, and I'm not going to read this one, I just wanted to make that point, but let's look at the verse, and this is really the hub of my lesson this evening. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. How do dead flies get into that perfumer's ointment? Well, neglect. We forget to cover it. We forget to protect it. It's expensive. It's very, very precious. It takes a lot of energy and work to get this. It's like that alabaster cruse that Mary broke for Jesus, and Judas became so incensed because it was worth an incredible amount of money. And that's the kind of ointment here that we're dealing with. And so there's no greater example than Solomon himself. A little folly. He wrote that verse. And he also wrote Proverbs 3:5-7. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. But Solomon, even with all of his wisdom, allowed a little folly, just a small tiny amount, to destroy him. The man who wrote this text is the man that God said, I have given you a wise and discerning heart, so that there has not been no, or so there has been no one like you before you, nor shall one like you arise after you. I've also given you what you have not asked for, riches and honor, so that there will not be any among the kings like you all your days. And yet, we don't remember Solomon in a good way, because when he was old, he worshipped idols. He built idols' temples. And God took the 10 tribes away from him, and it weakened the entire Jewish nation. It's fascinating how this works. We see it at the Tower of Babel, and we see it here with the Jewish kings. God could see that this is the direction the kings were going to go, and so he immediately does what is necessary to protect his future plans. And so God gave Solomon a specific warning. Now, it wasn't given to him then. It was given in the book of Moses. It's interesting. God never told Moses we're going to have kings. But he did say, when you set a king over you, he shall not multiply wives for himself, or else his heart will turn away. That was his little folly. You know, you look at this and you think to yourself, how could this have done that? Solomon talked to God. Solomon was given wisdom by God. Solomon built the tabernacle, and he was there when God came down into the tabernacle, and the glory shone. And if anyone could stay faithful and had everything he needed in order to live a life of honor and integrity like David his father, he had David his father as an example. He could see David, and he could see Saul. He could see what happened to Saul. He could see what happened to his father when his father allowed a little folly in his life. And yet, he ignored this command. We don't know why, but in all his wisdom and all of his trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding, he shall not multiply wives for himself. And so, how could he do that? This was his little folly. What kind of rationalization do you think he gave? You know, we have the same problem today. God said, do not be deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, he will reap. If we sow a little folly, doesn't matter what it is. If we sow a little folly, it's going to come back like those dead flies. And so with his great wisdom, his inspiration, his great love and devotion to God, can't happen to me. I don't know if he thought like that. I don't know if he even thought about this, but he ignored it. He drifted. He did not listen to this command that God had given. And the warning was, they will turn your heart away from me. And Solomon, I guess, didn't think that could happen. Because he didn't just barely not keep this commandment. He, what? Oh, lovely.
And context support.
When did that just now start or has been?
The beginning of the previous slide.
Oh, okay. I have such a lovely slideshow here. I hate to lose it. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to shut it off and keep preaching and turn it back on because that's the only way to fix this. So just give me just a second here. So Solomon loved many foreign women. Women that God had warned him not to love. And because of that, when he was old, they turned away his heart. Now, we might think to ourselves, that can't happen to me. But you know, this is a fixed thing. A little leaven leavens a whole lump. Solomon truly believed that he would not be influenced by this. Well, I guess I can't put words in Solomon's life. I don't know why he did what he did. I just know that as a result of what he did, he lost his soul. Okay, Brian, you're going to edit all this out, right? All right, let's catch up here. We working now? Yeah, good deal. You get all that? All right. King Solomon loved many foreign women. We've already talked about this slide, so I'm going to let it go. Except, let's look at verse 2. From the nations of whom the Lord had said to the children of Israel, you shall not intermarry with them, nor they with you. Surely they will turn away your hearts after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love. Now, how could he write Proverbs 3, 5 through 7, trust in the Lord with all your heart, don't lean on your own understanding, and do this? How could he have this great wisdom and not see that this would be the result? And yet, countless thousands and probably millions of servants of God through the years have fallen into the same issue. It's just a small thing. I'll be able to beat this. I'll be able to overcome this. I will not allow this to do to me what happened to them. Now, as I say, God doesn't tell us why he did it. He just tells us that he did it. And he also tells us how much he did it. He had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And his wives did turn away his heart. For it was so when Solomon was old that his wives turned his heart after other gods. And his heart was not loyal to the Lord his God, as was the heart of his father David. For Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, and after Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. Now, as I said, none of us stand to the stature of Solomon. We are not inspired like Solomon was. We do not have wisdom, so that no one has ever been like us before, and no one has ever been like us after. But even a man of that stature could not withstand the neglect of a single warning that God had given to him. It grew and it grew and it grew. And it's interesting how far it actually did grow. Solomon did evil in the sight of the Lord and did not fully follow the Lord as did his father. Then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, on the hill that is east of Jerusalem. So in the site of the holy temple of God, he built other temples. He built a temple for Moloch. He built a temple for Chemosh. Verse 8, he did likewise for all his foreign wives, who burned incense and sacrificed to their gods. Truly, a little folly has created this terrible outcome with Solomon. So these women worked on his heart like dead flies did on perfume. Their evil companionship corrupted, their leaven leavened, and small compromises led to full rebellion. I mean, when you build a temple in Jerusalem, don't you think other people in Israel are going to see that? And don't you think that they're going to be able to understand something's wrong with Solomon? He was a wise man in his youth, but now look what he's doing. And we've all been able to do this with people that we've known through the years. There's something wrong with that person now. We couldn't see it when it was a little folly, but a little folly turns into something that ultimately will destroy us. And so, brethren, this is a lesson that none of us can afford to overlook, because most of us have things in our lives that shouldn't be there. And we've seen them, we've preached on them, we have talked about them, and you are clear in your mind, I got to quit doing this. But we don't make it a priority. We don't take the time to actually stop it. And it's hidden. Nobody can see it. And so it appears that we are righteous and we are godly. But you know, one of these days, God is not mocked. A man will reap what he sowed. And sometimes, as Jesus said, it's done in private, but it's spoken on the housetops. What you whisper, a little bird will take, and everyone will ultimately hear it. As Paul said, some men's sins are evident going before unto judgment. And so let him who thinks he stand take heed lest he fall. So we need to take a good hard look at our own personal lives, because, as I said, if it can happen to Solomon, then it can happen to anyone on the job or at home, in our entertainment or our hobbies. Something can creep in our doctrine or in our integrity, on the computer, the friends that we develop, the co-workers, and our language. Are we careful with our language? How about our morality? How about our spirituality? How about our good works and our honesty? These are all things that can slowly erode. A little bit of folly can get in. And so as we look at these things, we need to take a good hard look at our personal life, because we can't afford to drift. We've started well. Most of us are well on our way to being faithful until death. But that can change in a heartbeat. We see it happen to David on a rooftop. We see it happen to Solomon over the years. We see it happen to King Saul. And we see it happen to Moses when he strikes the rock. It's just a little folly, a little anger. I don't know what Moses did or didn't do that led to that. But there was something in his life that led to that outburst. And I'm sure he went back and looked it over and said, oh my, if I'd only dealt with this back here, that wouldn't happen. And I could go into the promised land. So we need to look at these small compromises that we make sometimes. It's those little compromises, the ones that make our conscience hurt a little bit. Those are the danger zones. Those are the things that can show us where the problem might be. But this is how the godly are corrupted. The godly teenager becomes ensnared to porn, and a godly woman is led into adultery, and a godly man begins to drink alcohol. We remember in our personal life, I remember my youth telling myself, I will never, ever do this. And you know something? Sometimes I did. Now, I wasn't a Christian at the time, so I didn't have the information and the knowledge, but it was a sad thing to tell myself, I will never, ever do this, and then do it. But a lot of us have those memories. A moment of neglect can open the door, and now we have a lifetime of fighting temptation that we never should have had to fight, because we never should have opened the door into that. But sometimes these things happen. A little folly, and now I have a lifetime of hard work and toil and effort ahead of me to try to get this door closed again, which never should have been open in the first place. And so these are the things that we have to look at. And you remember this poem. I really like it. I think it really hits something very hard. And of course, it's spoken in language. This was before when English was spoken a little differently. But I think it's pretty much to the point. Vice is a monster of so frightful mien. And that means the face. It's just so ugly. Vice is ugly. As to be hated, you just have to see it. And in the 50s, that was true. We had a vice squad, and the vice squad was out there crushing pornography and crushing homosexuality and crushing drug abuse and prostitution. And they were out there doing their job, and we were really behind them. But over the years, all of those vices have now either been legalized or are trying to be legalized, because if we see it too often, familiar with her face, first we endure, then we pity, and then we embrace. I think we've seen that happen. Most of us with a little bit of gray, we've seen that happen with these vices. How the country looked at them, and they were disgusted by them, and they could see them for the terrible, terrible attitudes that they actually created and the problems. But this doesn't just happen to a culture. It happens to a Christian. And we have to realize that these days of small things, you know, God, when the children of Israel were crying because the temple was so small, God told them, who has despised the day of small things? Because when it comes to God, the little things that we do ultimately get bigger and bigger and better until we grow and develop. But when we give in to sin, those little things, if we despise those little things, they're going to end up causing us a lot of problems. And then, of course, there's James chapter 4, where James says, to him who knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. So there's some more small things. When are we going to find the time to add to our faith, as we're talking about this morning? On the other side of the column, on the right side, think on these things. Hear these words of mine and do them. Pray without ceasing. Buy up opportunities. Put off the old man and put on the new man. Treat our spouse better. Worship in spirit and truth. Conquer besetting sins. Did we touch anything yet? Do we have a little folly in our life? I think most of us do. And I think that these are dead flies that can seriously compromise the kind of person we're ultimately going to be and how we're going to be judged on the judgment day. You know, I could have put Judas instead of Solomon, and we could have talked about Judas, who was also inspired, who was also performing miracles, who was with Jesus for 3 years. And yet, because he didn't conquer that one lust that he was dealing with, it led to his complete destruction. And so it can happen. And I know that everyone here can tell me about somebody that it's happened to that they know, somebody they loved, somebody they trusted, their own familiar friend maybe, who suddenly, without any warning, was gone. And you looked and you thought, how could that have happened? And then, of course, if we have any love for the Lord and love for ourselves, we start looking inward. Is there something I could have done? And most of the time there isn't, because they didn't seek any counsel. They didn't seek any advice. They didn't confess their sins, and so we didn't know. So any one of these little follies can destroy us just like it did Solomon. And so any time we stop trusting in the Lord with all our heart and begin to lean on our own understanding, that's a risk. That's the risk that all of us face. And you know, not many of you have confided in me, and I wouldn't expect you to. I don't really want to know all the besetting sins that everybody here has. But we need to take stock, and we need to give careful consideration. Solomon lost everything before he died. You know what troubles me the most is when God sent the prophet Ahijah, the same one who had been working with Solomon, to Jeroboam and said, here, take 10 pieces of this garment. These 10 tribes are going to be used. And you know what Solomon did? When Solomon heard that, he tried to kill Ahijah. He didn't repent. He tried to kill Ahijah. You would think that a man would be smart enough with that kind of wisdom and that kind of understanding to know you built temples in Jerusalem, your heart is not loyal with God, so I'm taking these tribes away from you and giving them to Jeroboam. And he says, what does he do? He tries to kill Jeroboam. Now, that's not a good heart. And that's happened to us as well. We go to a loved one, we go to a friend, we want to talk to them, and they lash out. And they get mad. I'm thinking, what did I do? Do I become your enemy because I tell you the truth? Well, what happened? A few dead flies that putrefied in the ointment, and now that beautiful ointment is worthless. And so is that beautiful soul that had so much potential. So we can't forget these dead flies that can putrefy and cause our own lives to stink, just like we see other people. Like I said, I can tell you, and you can tell, most of you have told me situations in your past, and I've got them in my past, people we loved, people we trusted, people we spent time with, people we had confidence in. And then one day, like Solomon, they did something, and you're just thinking, where did that come from? Well, if they would sit down with us, which they wouldn't, but if they would sit down with us, we would find out that somewhere in their youth or somewhere in their middle age, something got into them. And they didn't stamp it out. They opened a door into something, and they didn't trust in the Lord with all their heart. They didn't take care of it. And it just, like that fruit, it went rotten. Like that leftover, it went bad. Like that small problem, it became big and huge. And so, consequences. Aaron said, I put this in the fire and out came this calf. Well, I think there might be a little more involved here. But you know, that's an interesting story. Because Moses told God, find somebody else. There's got to be somebody in Israel better than me. There's 600,000 men over there. Go find somebody who's better than me. And you know something? There wasn't anybody. Aaron He fell. He couldn't take a stand even against the children of Israel when they just came across the Red Sea and Moses is up on Mount Sinai a few days later. And here he is making them a golden calf just like Solomon. How could he do that? Well, he didn't have that root within himself. With Moses there, he could stand strong. But without Moses, he didn't have the root. And we look at the rest of the people. Well, they all died in the wilderness. All 600,000 of them murmured and grumbled themselves right into death in the wilderness. So who was there? Well, Joshua maybe, but Joshua needed to be under Moses for a while and see his convictions and his commitment. So no, God didn't have anybody but Moses. And so when Moses is complaining about how he can't speak very well, and some of us do the same thing, we may be the most godly, devout person in the whole region. But God can't use us because we're hiding behind an excuse. We're telling ourselves, I couldn't be the one to do that. Well, who made a man's mouth? God knows these things. And so Aaron's a classic example of this. And King Saul, who forced himself to offer the burnt offering, which cost him his kingdom. When David saw Bathsheba bathing, he had a few moments to consider his action before lust conceived and brought the sword that shall never depart from your house. And again, it would be interesting to find out, you know, maybe after we die, we could ask David, David, what happened there? I mean, was there something in your youth? Was there something there that you let go? How did that happen? Because that shouldn't have happened. That never should have happened. He already had like five wives, and God told him, look, I've given you these wives. I would have given you many more. Why? Why did you do this? Well, if David had any sense, he went back and he figured it out. Because that's part of the repentance process, is trying to figure out how in the world could that have happened. I would have never seen that coming. Well, it never happens that way. No godly person just falls without some little folly way back here that could have been dealt with. There's no temptation taking you, but it's common to man, and God will make the way of escape. But our little folly, sometimes we won't take it. We won't take it. Gehazi's decision to ask Naaman for a talent of silver and clothing led to the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and your descendants forever. Do you think that Gehazi may have regretted that decision? Well, it was a greed situation. How did that happen? Well, somewhere in Gehazi's past, he was seeking things for himself. And when the moment of truth came, he fell. Now, he wouldn't have fallen if he'd have said, you know, this is a serious problem in my character. I've got to deal with this. I've got to start building walls and fences, and I've got to take care of this. And that's what we all need to do if we have something like this. You know, a bad temper or sexual desires or greed or a propensity toward addictive behavior, can't seem to control our desires. These things can one day come back and truly damage us. And so the fact is that dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and for honor. And we see that in Adam and Eve. We see that in Cain. We see that as we go down the history of God's people. We see them, they start out well, and then they make them for themselves a little bit of folly. I'm sure Sarah regretted giving Abraham her handmaid. I'm sure that Aaron regretted making that golden calf. But they did. They allowed the little folly. And brethren, we don't want that. We don't want some big blight in our character. Yeah, we can be forgiven of it, but we don't want something like that. It's like Hezekiah. Hezekiah could have gone to his maker, having been completely faithful and godly and righteous right up until the end. But after God said, you know, you need to put your house in order, because God could see something. God could see that wealth and honor and power was about to come to Hezekiah, and he couldn't handle it. And so God said, set your house in order, you're going to die. Well, he turned his face to the wall and he begged and God relented. Gave him 15 years. But what does it say in Chronicles? He did not restore according to the benefit given to him, but his heart was lifted up, and wrath came upon Jerusalem because they were doing the same thing Solomon did. They were going back to their idolatrous practices, and they were putting God second. And so this just happens over and over and over. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that he will reap. So tonight when we get home, let's start looking for dead flies. You've got them. I've got them. Well, I've got them. I don't know if you have them. Maybe some of you don't have them. I suspect you do. We're all human, which means we've all opened doors we shouldn't have opened. And we all have character flaws that we know we should work on, and we know we should put more effort into, because you know something? One of these days, they may end up causing our death or causing us to fall away or bringing something into our lives we never, ever anticipated. And how will we bear the agony of knowing that by our own choices, we destroyed our life and the lives of those we love. All the years that we spent building this up, it can all be lost so quickly. And so any dead flies can destroy the wonderful perfume of an honorable life. A little folly, a little trust in the Lord with all your heart. Well, you know, I can work this one out. I don't have to do it exactly God's way. That's never, ever going to work. And so remember David's anguished words as he saw the consequences of his own dead flies in the life of his son Absalom. The king was much moved and went up to the chamber over the gate and wept. And as he went, thus he said, "Oh, my son Absalom, my son Absalom, would I had died for you, oh, Absalom, my son, my son." He lost his son. His son was killed in rebellion against God's order. And David knew what the outcome of that was going to be. His agony, I can understand his agony. And you can too. And yet, this could all be traced back to that moment on the rooftop when something happened. That if you'd have told David the day before, you know, David, before you die, you're going to commit adultery and you're going to kill someone. You're going to murder them. Do you think David would, oh, I know. He would say, that's impossible. But a little folly made it possible. As far as he was concerned right now, he bore some of the guilt for what happened to his son. And so, brethren, as we conclude our lesson this evening, this is something for all of us to think about. I know these aren't pleasant things. We'd rather have a nice lesson on heaven, a nice lesson on the joys of our salvation. But like I've told you so many times, it's one thing to talk about heaven. It's another thing to get there. And I'd rather make sure we all get there. If we don't even have time to talk about how beautiful it is, none of us are going to care if we get there. And you'll be shaking my hand. Thank you, Alan, for the way that you did these things to prepare us. And so we're going to open up our songbooks now to number 336. And as we sing that song this evening, and as you have an opportunity this week to think about some of the things in this lesson, don't let this slip away. Because God has given all of us this opportunity to look through our life and try to find these dead flies. These emotions that we know we shouldn't have, but we don't conquer. These self-besetting sins that we continue to succumb to, and we don't really crush them like we talked about this morning. We don't get them out of our life. And all of those are holes in our armor. And one of these days, the devil's going to come along. You remember what Paul says in Ephesians chapter 6? When that evil day comes, you know, we talk about a flood. But when the 100-year flood comes, or the 500-year flood comes, when the evil day comes, we better make sure we've got everything taken care of. So as we sing the song, if we can help you in any way, if you'd like to make your life right with God, if you'd like to confess your sins or be baptized into Christ, we'd like to give you that opportunity.